Hello, and welcome back to Climate Changes Everything. My name is Lincoln Blevins, and this is episode 2, Playing with Fire. As I promised last time, our story begins a long, long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Well, not quite a galaxy, but certainly a world very different from today's. About 1 million years ago, a group of our distant ancestors, Homo erectus, gathered in a large cave in what is now the Northern Cape province of South Africa. Today, that cave is called Wonderwork, which is the Afrikaans word for miracle. And that's a pretty good description of what happened next. Those Homo erectus ancestors cooked a meal over a campfire. Not a wildfire, a campfire. A controlled fire that was planned, created, managed, and utilized for a specific need. An intentional, purposeful fire. They already had pretty good stone tools. This controlled fire added a thermodynamic tool to their tool belt, so to speak. In fact, it's the first one, the earliest one, we found in the fossil record. Wait a second, you're saying. You're kicking off your must-listen, world-changing, blockbuster climate change podcast by asking me to be impressed by a campfire? I am indeed, and here's why. Control of fire changed everything. Control of fire immediately provided the on-demand warmth and safety for Homo erectus in a world with a lot of fast-running, sharp-toothed predators. In the slightly longer run, control of fire fundamentally changed how and what we ate, and because cooking substantially increases the variety and nutritional value of the food we eat, how our hominid brains and bodies have evolved all the way to the present day. Think language, tool use, belief systems, government, agriculture, commerce, art, the list goes on and on. The very things that make us human. Control of fire also opened up the world beyond very limited temperate climates like that place in South Africa. All of a sudden, the rest of the planet, even the coldest parts, was fair game for us hominids. And perhaps most importantly, control of fire transformed social and behavioral norms, reinforcing our ability and willingness to work together, which is, of course, our species' competitive advantage in an unforgiving world. Despite all that, do spare a thought for both our Homo erectus and older Homo sapiens ancestors. They wouldn't have marshmallows to roast over those fires until about 4,000 years ago. And even more tragically, the crowning campfire meets marshmallow achievement, the s'more, would not be invented until the early 20th century. I see the invention of the wheel as a mere game changer by comparison to the control of fire, and not nearly as tasty. Without control of fire, it's hard to imagine human history or even modern Homo sapiens at all. It was our first step in separating ourselves from the rest of the ecosystem. Proactive instead of merely reactive, creative instead of merely adaptive, and, I think, our first real move into an extractive rather than circular way of living on planet Earth. Scientists are debating words like Anthropocene to define this part of the Earth's life when hominids significantly impact the planet's geology and ecosystems, including the climate. We're in it now, of course, but there's a lot of disagreement about when it began. Some start the clock with the so-called Great Acceleration of fossil-fueled economic activity following the Second World War. Some go back to the industrial revolutions or even the development of agriculture some 10,000 years ago. But I go back to that first marshmallowless campfire. When we first intentionally, and underlining the word intentionally, added carbon to the atmosphere that would not otherwise be there. As we'll see, our first, our albeit unknowing compromise with the planet's climate in the service of human development, on the path to the extraordinary species we now are. I sometimes call it the great existential compromise, the key word there being compromise, trading unknown risks and costs for known benefits. Simply put, energy is the origin story of climate change, and compromise is the story of energy. As we talk about this, it's important to note that WonderWork is just an example, albeit a very dramatic one. Dealing as it does with the incredibly distant past, paleoanthropology is by its very nature an inexact science. We only get to study what we are able to find, which is a subset of what is actually preserved and as yet undiscovered. And what is actually preserved is itself a microscopic slice of what our hominid ancestors actually made and otherwise impacted, which in turn is a microscopic slice of the whole lives of those individuals and societies. The languages, for example, of preliterate societies are completely lost to us, and with it their histories, hopes and fears, and understanding of the world they inhabited. So the site at WonderWork is a miracle, no doubt about it, but probably not the first controlled fire, not by a long shot. Other sites elsewhere in the world may in fact be older, much older, which itself is really, really cool. Someone over the hill in Silicon Valley is doubtless working on time travel as we speak, but for now, we will work with what we have, and that's WonderWork. Back at the campfire, I'm sure there were naysayers. Let's call them Homo erectus ludditus. Yes, I made that up. They surely tisked those brave early adopters. Now, I don't speak Homo erectus, but I'm sure it was something similar to, you'll burn yourselves, you'll start a wildfire, and hey, the smoke is stinging my eyes. They were correct in their own way, of course. Like all forms of energy, fire can be both absurdly useful and absurdly dangerous. We know now that fire produces greenhouse gases and pollutes the air with particulate emissions, carbon monoxide and dioxide, nitrogen oxides, sulfur oxides, and other nasty chemicals. But forward-looking Homo erectus innovatus, yeah, I made that up too, needed the benefits and both unknowingly and knowingly accepted those costs, at least the subset of the costs that they knew about at the time. In other words, benefits, costs, compromise. So back around the campfire, I like to think that apologies were made and accommodations agreed upon. You know, perhaps they put a ring of stones around the fire as a safety measure. And pretty soon, control of fire became a thing, begetting both our own species, Homo sapiens, and through continued innovation, every source and use of energy since then. As we'll see, it's not just fire. Each energy innovation, each energy variation, has its own benefits, costs, compromise. This is important because human beings are defined by the use of energy. No other species interacts with, let alone controls, energy the way that we do. We use it to light, heat, and cool our homes and businesses. We use it to power our vehicles and devices, to manufacture and transport all of our stuff, and to keep the internet and all its wonders, including this podcast, humming along. Energy provides tremendous benefits to ourselves as individuals and together at the level of our societies and economies. Any electric power outage or fuel shortage makes it doubly clear. Besides water, energy defines both our survival and our prosperity. At its simplest, we release energy as heat. Think of that wonderwork campfire or a natural gas-burning furnace or stovetop. In modern times, we often transform it before we burn it so that it can better serve other end uses like propulsion. Gasoline and diesel fuel are great examples of this. But the impact is the same. Greenhouse gases and other nasty, impactful pollutants are released into the finite atmosphere of our small planet, far in excess of what would naturally occur. They decay very, very slowly, and not before they do significant damage. So, as they build up, the planet's complex systems become unbalanced. Mother Nature starts to transform into a rampaging, incredible Hulk, and, like the Hulk, we suffer when she is angry. Heat storms, wildfires, melting glaciers and rising sea levels, droughts and floods. You know the story. We see it every day in the news. I'm not going to dwell on the doomsday forecasts. We all know those. But we have to touch base with the reality of the costs we have incurred as we begin to understand the complex interactions of technology and behavior and planet that have gotten us to this precipice. From simple open fires to steam and electricity to natural gas and gasoline and even nuclear power, it all started with a first campfire. With those tremendous species-defining benefits come tremendous costs, and thus compromise. All energy is compromise. Take electricity, for example. Reliable and affordable electric power has become fundamental to our economies and societies. Each way we make electricity provides tremendous benefits and, you guessed it, significant costs. That's compromise. From the smokiest old coal plant to the shiniest new solar farm, compromise. I'll do a deeper dive in future episodes, but let's run down a few examples so that you understand what I mean. Fossil fuels like coal and natural gas are reliable, but create those significant greenhouse gas emissions and pollute air, water, and soil. Hydroelectric power is greenhouse gas free, but disfigures natural landscapes and habitats. Nuclear power is also greenhouse gas free, but requires extraordinary engineering, operational, and security measures to match its extraordinary challenges. And we still don't have a permanent solution for radioactive waste. On the renewable side, solar panels, wind turbines, and energy storage technologies are also greenhouse gas free in operation, but use rare earth metals with massive environmental and social impacts in mining, processing, disposal, and recycling. Those compromises are just a few examples. And again, worthy of deeper examination. Connecting those resources to you and me are the electric transmission and distribution lines, necessary but unloved, that march across the landscape and through our neighborhoods. It's important to note that renewable resources, by their nature, require enormous amounts of space and electric transmission infrastructure, much more than legacy resources of the same capacity. And that's something we'll touch on in future episodes. So back to our Homo erectus ancestors. Put yourself in their shoes, or, you know, feet, I guess. If you had perfect foresight on the compromises unleashed by those first campfires, would you do anything differently? Probably not. The benefits, you know, humanity itself, after all, have been too great. So even with perfect foresight in the past, we would probably get to the same problem in the present. And in any case, we are not them, innocently enjoying the newfound warmth and safety of that crackling fire. We're on the other end of the problem and looking for solutions like renewable energy. When we think about renewable energy and its compromises, it's vitally important that we turn all this perfect hindsight into the best foresight we can muster. In other words, while we work to mitigate the environmental impacts of greenhouse gases, pollution, radioactive waste, and all the past other leftovers, we have a historic opportunity to see the compromises of our new energy solutions and act now to mitigate them. So while we maximize the near-term economic and societal benefits of these technologies, let's not leave the substantial environmental costs to future generations. For fossil fuels and nuclear waste, those future generations are now us. For renewable energy technologies and batteries, those future generations are our progeny. As Homo erectus first discovered, energy has tremendous benefits despite the compromises they, and now we, have to make with its risks. As Mother Nature discovered, control of fire by hominids started an inexorable transformation of planet Earth. Energy being the origin story of climate change and thus climate changing everything. In the next episode of Climate Changes Everything, we will leave Homo erectus behind and dive into the climate pivotal electric power system to frame a vital question. Knowing these compromises, how can we simultaneously decarbonize our aging electric system and electrify our economies and societies, all the while making that system much more resilient to climate change's impacts? I'll see you in about 2 weeks for another episode of Climate Changes Everything, which I'm excited to announce is now available on pretty much every podcast streaming service I can find. Thanks for listening.